This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 881 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israeli forces continued to violate the fraudulent ceasefire in Gaza this week, killing Palestinians and reimposing a total closure of the crossings to humanitarian aid, food, fuel, and medicine. In the town of Bani Suhaila near Khan Yunis on Wednesday, Israeli soldiers shot and killed two Palestinians, Montasser Samur and Maher Samur. According to local news sources, an Israeli military unit abducted the two men and took them across the so-called yellow line, detained them, and shot them. Reporter Tamer Keshta captured video footage and eyewitness testimony from residents who said that the Israeli army returned Montasser Samur's body riddled with bullets, while Maher Samur was shot and killed in what witnesses described as a field execution. One man showing the journalist the wounds on one of the men's body says, quote, "This is torture. They kidnapped him and threw his body at the Al-Karara Bridge. A witness said one man was shot in the chest and ran. He fell and was martyred. This one was shot in the legs. They took him and fled. When we brought him here, his whole chest, his whole abdomen was full of bullets. Executed. The witness said the men were going to pick radishes and chard for their families. They were staying and living there. He was a caretaker in a destroyed house on land near the yellow line. He slept and lived there day after day, night after night. We're on that land every day." Anadolu News Agency reported that earlier in the day, heavy gunfire from Israeli military vehicles stationed east of the so-called yellow line was reported in those areas near Khan Yunis, and that Israeli artillery also targeted neighborhoods east of Gaza City, while Israeli gunboats fired toward the coastline. Last week, on February 26th, Israeli warplanes targeted a Palestinian police checkpoint at the entrance to the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza, killing at least one police officer and injuring another, according to the Palestinian Ministry of the Interior and National Security. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reported on Wednesday that since the so-called ceasefire went into effect nearly 5 months ago, at least 633 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,700 have been injured. In the same time period, the health ministry stated that more than 750 bodies of Palestinians have been recovered so far from underneath the rubble after more than 2 years of genocide. The Civil Defense Corps in northern Gaza stated this week that they had finished a 9-day operation that they called the Dignity of Martyrs campaign, in which they recovered 93 bodies of Palestinians killed in Israeli airstrikes and buried beneath collapsed homes. In the absence of heavy equipment and fuel to operate machinery, which continued to be blocked by the Israelis, the civil defense workers used their hands and simple tools to retrieve the human remains. The civil defense said that more than 500 bodies remain under the rubble, denying surviving family members the dignity of properly burying their loved ones. Civil defense worker Mohamed Loai filmed himself and his colleagues working tirelessly in the mountains of rubble and said that they are working to renew the campaign in order to retrieve all of the bodies in that area. In the immediate aftermath of the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran that began over the weekend, the Israeli government and military closed all of the crossings into and out of Gaza, further exacerbating the humanitarian and infrastructure crisis. On Tuesday, the Kerem Shalom or Kerem Abu Salem crossing in the south of Gaza was partially opened, but all other crossings have remained closed, including the Rafah crossing at the Egyptian border, which had been partially reopened since early February and was used for people returning to Gaza and medical evacuations from Gaza. In addition, according to the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz, the Allenby Bridge crossing between Jordan and the West Bank has likewise been closed to goods and humanitarian aid following a decision by the Israeli Airports Authority, which oversees the crossing. Writing in the LA Times this week, Ahmed Khan of the eponymous humanitarian aid organization, the Ahmed Khan Foundation, stated that, quote, for more than 5 months, 15,000 boxes of children's cold medicine and other vital medicines meant for kids in the Gaza Strip have been sitting in a warehouse awaiting approval from Israeli authorities that never seems to come. To Israeli officials, the cold medicine I am trying to deliver is a potential weapon, he adds. Quote, Israeli officials fear that Hamas will steal the bottles and transform the small amounts of glycerin in the medicine to make explosives, despite there being no evidence that armed groups in Gaza have done or could do this. Israel has refused to clarify what percentage of glycerin would be allowed, so we can't even source an alternative that would be assured of clearance. The medicine remains in a warehouse while children in Gaza continue to die because they can't get basic treatments. Meanwhile, the United Nations Humanitarian Office stated that between the October 2025 so-called ceasefire and until mid-February, quote, an additional 853 people have reportedly acquired new disabilities. This includes 496 new amputations, 186 spinal cord injuries, and 171 traumatic brain injuries. The UN added that despite rising needs, assistive products, including prosthetics, continue to be classified by the Israeli authorities as dual-use items, which severely restricts their entry into the Gaza Strip. During this period, only 300 artificial limbs were allowed to enter Gaza under the health cluster framework, while the cumulative number of amputations since October 2023 now exceeds 5,000. In addition to the 496 new amputations recorded since the ceasefire. Shelter materials are also being heavily restricted by Israel. According to the UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric on Wednesday, if the rainy season continues, hundreds of thousands of people whose homes have been destroyed remain at risk of flooding in their dilapidated tents. Dujarric said that 8 temporary relocation sites have been established in Gaza, but critical materials remain out of reach. Quote, we and our partners still do not have the tools and the materials to make shelters that are longer lasting, he said, noting that the entry of these supplies continues to be heavily restricted and they're difficult to find on the local markets. Such supplies include toolkits, timber and cement to repair homes, and heavy machinery to clear rubble and to make more space for dignified housing. Turning to the occupied West Bank, dozens of Israeli settlers attacked the village of Kariut near Nablus in the north on Tuesday. One of the attacking settlers is a reservist soldier who shot and killed 2 Palestinian men, Mohammed Taha Muammar, who was shot in the head, and his brother Fahim Taha Muammar, who was shot in his lower body. Eyewitnesses reported that armed settlers carrying rifles and iron bars stormed homes in the southern part of the village and opened fire on residents. At least 3 other people were injured in the attack, according to Middle East Monitor, including a 30-year-old man with a shoulder wound, a 32-year-old man with a knee injury, and a 15-year-old boy who sustained a gunshot wound to the shoulder. Also on Tuesday, Israeli forces opened fire on a Palestinian man and a child in the Askar refugee camp east of Nablus on the 2nd consecutive day of invasions and raids by the army. The Palestine Red Crescent Society reported that its teams treated a 20-year-old young man who was shot in the foot with live bullets and an 11-year-old child who was shot in the hand. The army conducted home raids and subjected residents to interrogations, the local Wafa news agency reported. On Wednesday, Wafa reported that Israeli soldiers shot and injured 5 Palestinians in Jenin during an invasion in the central part of the city. A medical source at Al-Razi Hospital in Jenin told the news agency that among the injured was a young man who was shot in the back, with the bullet exiting through his chest, leaving him in critical condition. And in Jerusalem, Israeli occupation authorities closed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound since the U.S. and Israel launched attacks on Iran, preventing worshippers from entering the mosque and the surrounding courtyards during Ramadan. Israeli forces have imposed an almost complete closure of the occupied West Bank since Saturday's attacks on Iran, locking barriers and gates and closing all checkpoints until, quote, further notice, as Kogat, the Israeli military's bureaucratic wing, said on February 28th. We've published many features in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Saving Lives at a Time of Slaughter by Samah Zahir Zakut, writing from Gaza. Zakut profiles Dr. Bakr Abu Safiya, a 65-year-old senior surgeon who worked at Al-Awda Hospital in Jabalia, northern Gaza, at the beginning of Israel's genocide. He recounts how he barely escaped death while treating his patients, narrowly avoiding an Israeli sniper's bullet inside the hospital in 2024. Despite all this danger, Dr. Bakr Abu Safiya pushed himself beyond the limits, refusing to leave his patients, as he said, was the only surgeon in northern Gaza, Zakut writes. On October 16, 2024, Dr. Bakr was managing two operating rooms simultaneously, he said, while two other critical patients waited in the reception area. Meanwhile, his cousin, Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, transferred to him four cases, and in less than half an hour later, he sent 10 more. But Bakr Abu Safiya sorted through these other cases and kept working from 3 p.m. until 2:45 a.m., where, in 12 hours, he performed 14 surgeries, including three cases that needed kidney removal and other cases involving damaged spleens, livers, or intestines. Abu Safiya would sometimes perform surgeries that were not his specialty. His erstwhile colleague, Dr. Saeed Judah, would sometimes send him vascular surgery cases. "It wasn't my specialty, but I had studied it, and since no one else was there, I did the surgeries," Abu Safiya said. "I never failed a surgery." Some patients needed to be transferred to Gaza City for plastic or orthopedic surgery, but since many couldn't, I did two orthopedic surgeries myself, even though it wasn't my specialty. Abu Safiya said that what caused him deep psychological pain, which still affects him, is losing coworkers or watching them get detained. On December 12, 2024, Dr. Saeed Judah was killed when an Israeli tank fired at the car he was in, marked with a red crescent sign and a white flag. Not long after, the Israeli army abducted Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya on December 27, 2024. He's still suffering in Israeli dungeons. Before the January 2025 ceasefire was announced, the Israeli army besieged Al-Awda Hospital for the third time, blocking all the roads that surrounded the hospital with sand barriers, allowing no cars or even ambulances to get through. The hospital relied on a small generator to run medical equipment for a few hours daily. Its staff used the remaining fuel to power the operating rooms, reception, and lab, limiting surgical procedures to life-saving cases. Abu Safiya said that they had to carry the wounded to the operating rooms with help from others as there were no elevators. "I can never forget an 8-year-old boy who begged me not to cut his leg," Abu Safiya said. "I promised him that I will do everything I can to save it. And we did." After the ceasefire was announced in January 2025, Abu Safiya's family returned to northern Gaza. When Abu Safiya reunited with them and saw his children, he was shocked by how they looked, something that broke him from the inside. "They looked tanned and had lost a lot of weight," he said. After Israel unilaterally ended the January ceasefire, the Israeli army besieged the hospital for the fourth and last time. "It was the worst," Abu Safiya said. "I was the only surgeon in northern Gaza, the sole specialist in everything. Even in total darkness and without internet or phone service, we kept working as best we could. The area was emptied, and we were the last to leave," Abu Safiya said of the Israeli army ordering them to evacuate on June 28, 2025. Those still in Al-Awda Hospital left in Health Ministry-coordinated vehicles from northern Gaza to Gaza City, he said, as there was nothing left. "There were no supplies, no food, no water," Abu Safiya said. "The hospital could no longer function. No one could reach the hospital thereafter." After the so-called October 2025 ceasefire, Al-Auda Hospital was located behind Israel's new yellow line. Abu Safia returned with his family to another apartment he has in Gaza City, since his first one is uninhabitable after being burned by the Israeli army. "But we endure. I continue to work," he said, of working in Al-Auda Hospital in Nuseirat. "Inshallah, this will ease one day." Those are excerpts from Saving Lives at a Time of Slaughter by Samah Zahir Zakut, a lecturer at the University College of Applied Sciences, an online tutor, and a translator, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and reclamation across Palestine and around the world. In Gaza, the paracycling team and mutual aid organization, the Gaza Sunbirds, rehabilitated an area in the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza to build a volleyball court for the children. They say, quote, 52% of our land is now occupied. We're here at the yellow line in Burej camp, claiming our streets through sports and tradition. This volleyball court is one of many activities we have planned to bring sports to every corner of the strip. Ramadan Kareem to you all from Gaza, the Sunbirds say. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.